So thanks very much for having me here today. I'm going to start with a bit of a preamble before we get onto the story proper, but we're going to sort of orientate ourselves first. And about 4 years ago, I stumbled onto a high-status Roman site in the woods in West Berkshire. And I'm going to start by showing you a video of those woods. And if you can just sort of imagine what it would be like to be in those woods, what you would see, I'll just be quiet and I'll let you watch the video and see if you can see any clues. See a circle, an indentation, some flint. It's a very special place. There's a theory in archaeology that people respond to places that have been persistently occupied in time, and this is one of those places. So, before we get going properly, it's important to locate archaeology in the periods with which we discuss archaeology. And I wondered if we could work out all together which is this the correct order of periods. So, who thinks it's A? B? C? Yeah, you're all correct. It's very clever. Well done. So most of my talk is going to be about Roman archaeology. I'm a Roman archaeologist. But I'm going to actually start by talking about Iron Age and the Iron Age hill forts, because if you look northeast here, there is an Iron Age hill fort up on the hill. You saw it, did you? Yeah. It's incredible, isn't it? So it's 6 miles northeast from here. And the little picture right in the far corner is of what you tend to see when you go to an Iron Age museum. You see the idea that these were Celtic warriors with blue on their face and they were really, really aggressive. But one of the reasons I picked out an Iron Age hill fort is actually there weren't enough people in Britain at that point to be aggressive, largely. The population was less than 1 million. And actually, we think that Iron Age hill forts were places where people, tribes, came together. They were neutral spaces, and they decorated them with rocks, with crafts, with fairs. They shared knowledge. They brought their animals. And one of the reasons I pulled it out is because that struck me. I've never been to EMF before, but it feels that that's what you're trying to do here, that these are neutral spaces where you share ideas and where you gather. And it's quite nice to think that 3,000 years ago, people were doing it up on the hill as well. The other thing to say about the Iron Age is that people love Romans. People think Romans were amazing because of Monty Python, but actually, well, other reasons too, obviously. But actually, the effort in creating an Iron Age hill fort, it's not glamorous. It doesn't have a tessellated pavement. It doesn't have a hypocaust. It won't have lots of material culture. But actually, you needed to be a really well-organized, happy society in order to create, to grow trees, to cut trees down, to make the ramparts, to dig the huge ditches that were associated with Iron Age hill forts. So we're going to talk a lot about the Romans, but actually the periods were really mixed. There are some parts of Britain that were actively Romanized at least 100 years before AD 43, which was the official beginning of the conquest in Britain. So, one thing I forgot to say. So I'm at Oxford, and there is a hill fort project at Oxford, and they got loads and loads of funding 20 years ago to map all the hill forts in Britain. It was one of the first citizen science programs, but because the funding ran out, they can't now port the hill forts to an open server. So if anyone was interested, there's a great project there, so I thought, just given the audience. Anyway, you can't have a Roman presentation without saying, what did the Romans do for us? And everyone knows about amphitheatres, aqueducts, roads, all of those amazing things. But these are some of my favourite things that the Romans did for this part of the world. They bought the cheese press. There was no cheese before the Romans arrived. They actually were vigorously anti any kind of human sacrifice, and that did go on in the Iron Age and in the Bronze Age periods. And also, they really wouldn't have agreed with Brexit. They were happily trading with the rest of Europe and even further afield, you know, all the way into the period and right before. And the other thing they brought is wheel-thrown pottery, and that's going to become important shortly for my talk. So, the clicker is taking form. So in the little précis of my talk, I promised that I would help you or give you some free tools that you could use to find out the archaeology where you are. And one of my favourite sites is the National Library of Scotland side-by-side mapping. And here you can see that you can take an old Ordnance Survey map and put it next to a modern map. Now, when they first started doing the Ordnance Survey mapping in 1847, they were very kind because they put down wherever they thought there might be a Roman villa or an Iron Age hill fort. Subsequent Ordnance Survey likes to hide it from you, but this is an open map and it's a really good thing to do. Now, we know in Britain at the moment there are approximately 60 Roman temples, 125 forts, most of them in the north of England, and 278 villas. But every time we have commercial archaeology going on, for example, Milton Keynes added 4 new villas and 3 new Roman temples to the archaeological record. We know, for example, that there is something called the Antonine Itinerary, and this was mapped in the Roman period, and it told us where the Roman roads were and where the settlements were linking them. And we're missing a town. We're missing a town round by Newbury. There's a whole Roman town that we haven't found. Similarly, the Hill Forts project added 2,000 hill forts to the archaeological record in Britain. So I encourage you to go home, to look on the National Library of Scotland and see what you can see side by side. Right. And actually, I did exactly this. This isn't the main thrust of the talk, but 2 years ago, I looked on the National Library of Scotland, you saw it before, and I found an antiquarian Roman villa. And with one of my professors, I did a magnetometry survey. And the important thing to say about this is that I published that information in the Historic Environment Record. And every council in Britain has a responsibility to publish all the archaeological information to the HER. So you can also search like Shropshire HER, Cambridgeshire HER, and you'll find out information. And if you want to go online and look for things, you actually only need to go backwards and Google Earth and find things like this, which is very obviously a Roman villa, a very high status Roman villa. And you can see that just by going back to a hot summer and Google Earth. And the other thing to say about this is so obviously a villa. One of the other great things about the Romans is that they knew, they had a pattern book for this structures that they built. So you can tell a fort, you can tell a vicus, you can tell a Roman villa, you can tell a temple, except for the site I found, which was much more enigmatic. So let's see if this will go forward. Let's get back to the story properly now. So in a way, this is a COVID story. This is a lockdown story. Because I was working for the local ambulance service in the southeast of England during lockdown. And I was called to a patient, and it was going to be a really long time to be backed up. And it was important that this patient was talking while I was doing his observation so that we could monitor his condition. And he used to work, he was retired, but he used to work on a big estate in West Berkshire. And he gave me this piece of pottery because we had a shared love of history. I'll put it under there. Can you see it? Where does it come up? Oh. Does it come up? Okay. If it can go back to the presentation now. There we go. Okay. So this pottery is called Samian pottery. Does anyone want to have a look? You could pass it around. And I recognized it immediately because It comes from continental, it comes from the Roman period, it comes from the continent, and it's exclusively high status Roman pot. And once you find Samian, you know that you're onto something exciting potentially. So I got permission from the estate managers to go and explore the woods, the thing that you saw. But first of all, I want to show you, because there's a lot of technology here at EMF, and my talk is not technology heavy, but the Samian bowl that I've done there is actually generated in stable diffusion, just to make sure that there is a tick in a box. So it's not great. It's pretty good. The color's pretty good, but the actual decoration's not right. But that's sort of what a Samian bowl looks like. So I went to explore the woods, and from this point onwards in the presentation, I'm going to say I, but I don't really mean I, because archaeology is it's rarely something that you do on your own. I can't move the presentation forward. There we go. All right. So one of the things that I did, and you can do as well, is I went to research this site, which had a big circle in the middle, and I found out that Mr. Bunbury, a Victorian landowner, had been rummaging around in this site 200 years ago, or 150 years ago, and he described it as an ancient tower or fort of venerable size. He said you could see the whole landscape from the top of it. And so what could I do? I wasn't yet an archaeologist. I hadn't gone to university. I didn't really know what to do. But I did understand that there was a Roman villa to the south, a Roman villa to the north, and this enigmatic site right up on the hill in between. And one of the things that I could do is start to put a grid in using Pythagoras. So in the woods, there's not much LIDAR in the woods, I could put a whole grid in, and I got some help with this as well. And we could go down all over the ground and draw exactly what we found. Because as soon as you go to university to be an archaeologist, you get really excited. You get a trowel for your Christmas present and everything, and you think, this is it, I'm going to be digging all the time. And when you turn up at university, the first thing they tell you is, actually, you must never dig. You must never dig. And you go, well, why didn't I do anthropology or something, you know? But you must never, ever dig. And the reason is because digging is something that's unrepeatable. So if I dig a hole, it means you can't dig that hole, your children can't dig that hole. So you have to be incredibly responsible if you're thinking that you're going to go under the ground. So first of all, I had to find out everything I could about this site. So let's see what else we can see. Now, the site, unfortunately, had been completely metal detected in the past as well. I subsequently found out that there was a metal detector who lived there for 2 years in the 1990s, and he took everything out of the ground. And one of the ways that we characterize sites is by the material culture, particularly the metal material culture. So all of that had gone, or largely gone. But what he hadn't done is looked for anything that was ferrous, because that was not valuable. He was looking for gold, he was looking for silver, he was looking for copper alloy. So to me, to be an archaeologist, anything is valuable. So we found lots of this. Does anybody know what this is? It's slag. So it's the side process of iron processing. It's a bit mucky, but someone is welcome to have a look and feel how heavy it is. There we go. I also found a cart fitting. And by analysing the cart fitting, I realised that it was the same metal. There's something, a PRXF machine at university. It was exactly the same metal as the cart fitting at Lullingstone Roman Villa. So we knew that we were onto something. And very simply, by doing a metal detecting survey, we could find whole lines. And this is actually where the roofs of the building had collapsed and the rows of the nails had come down. So we could start to think about reconstructing that building. Oh, this is difficult. So the building wasn't a villa. We know what villas look like. It was something different. And we're starting to think that this was a temple. And Roman temples aren't what you imagine. They're not what you see in Lara Croft games or people shooting or Raiders of the Lost Ark. A Roman temple is actually a tiny central building. And you walk around the outside. That's how they would have worshipped. And the cult figure was on the inside. And they dropped votive offerings as they walked around the outside. So these are two examples from Europe. And we were starting to think this could be the 64th Roman temple. And at the same time, LiDAR became released for the site from DEFRA. And you can go onto DEFRA's website and download the LiDAR tiles for any area that you're interested in. And by manipulating them in Affinity Designer or Photoshop, we started to see a central circle and buildings at each side coming out. I'm conscious I've only got 10 minutes, so we then went on to... I got permission from the county archaeologist to start test pitting, and we involved a whole community in doing this test pitting. And it was actually really exciting because one of my professors at university said, "You'll never find anything. It's completely robbed. There's nothing left. Don't waste your time." And the first time we opened a test pit, we went straight down onto that wall that was there. One of the things that we found in the test pit, there's only six in Britain found. It's half a Roman tongue, so this is almost 2,000 years old. And it was buried probably as a votive offering to say thank you for all the work, all the craft that they were able to produce with blacksmithing. That was an amazing thing to see. And the orange earth in there is a sign that there was blacksmithing going on. And then we found this. Will it run? This was a good day. This is LiDAR, just on your iPhone or your Android phone. It's a great way to capture things. You can see the pavement in the middle. And this is just with the test pit. We're going to excavate further to find the emblem in the middle to tell us a little bit more about what was going on. We also found some incredible things. I'm going to be careful passing this round because there are only 103 in the whole world. These brooches came across from Europe in AD 43. These are called Hod Hill brooches. They indicate a temple, so you can pass it around. So there we go.
Sorry to be shocked.
Yeah. And the other thing that we found, which was incredible, and it's amazing that it was still intact after 2,000 years, is painted wall plaster already with a decoration on it. So there's just pass around the tray. There you go. You can pass it around to people. It's incredible to have a look at. And window glass. Can you believe that they were making window glass 2,000 years ago? So this is the layout of the site. So we sort of knew what the site was looking like because the way that we'd mapped it. But we still couldn't characterize it because most of the finds had been metal detected before. And by characterizing it means I have to be able to confidently tell you that this is a temple or this is a villa or something like that. So I'm going to skip past because we don't have much time. But in archaeology, traditional archaeologists, believe it or not, throw this stuff away. The first dig I ever went to as a community dig, you were given this stuff to take home. This is a Roman roof tile, and this is a tegula, and you put the imbrex over the top like this to make it waterproof. And we had 200 kilograms of this stuff come out. So we started a community group to wash all the CBM and try to analyze it. It was a really good thing to do because we found out things like this has got hobnails on, so you can date it by the shoes that people were treading in with this was still plastic. This has got animal paw prints on, so we can understand the animals that were around the site at the time. But most importantly, we found this. Oh, thank you. And these are only found in bathhouses. So by finding this, we could confidently say that our Roman temple, as well as having a mosaic, had a whole bathhouse as well, without doing much invasive archaeology. And there's the arch that we could reconstruct from it. So this is what the bathhouse would have looked like. I'm going to move forward. The other thing I want to say, and I've had the thing saying 5 minutes, is that the temple that we all found had a striped roof. Again, only 6 buildings in Britain that we know had a striped roof. Some of that's bias in the archaeology. It was up on a hill, and the Romans painted the roof in blue stripes, so the imbrices were blue, so that people going along the river Pang, could look up and see it on the horizon, and it was more visible and more crafted, more of an effort to it. So, I'm going to show you the reconstruction as a final. I hope this works. We put all this data together. See the central tower with the stripes on it? So, in short, anyone can be an archaeologist. Archaeology should be something that we all do as a community because it gives you a connection to your environment. One of the things that I'm most proud of is that we've actually put in place a partnership with Recovery in Mind, which is a charity for people recovering from mental trauma who can come onto the site, who can get involved in digging, washing, whatever they want to do. Being in the woods, being part of something that's been there for thousands of years is a really lovely way to feel connected to your community. And as we started off by saying at the beginning of this talk, that's sort of what we're doing here at EMF. We're like the Iron Age hill forts over there. We're connecting, we're sharing skills. And archaeology doesn't have to be expensive. It's always time consuming. I don't have any fingernails left. They're always mucky and dirty. But anybody can find a Roman temple and record it and share the information with it. So thank you very much.